This is the Oanda Podcast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts from across the world about the latest market moves and business stories. And today I'm joined by Ed Moyer in New York and Craig Earlham in London. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with the UK, Craig, before we get to all the events in the United States and across the world. Latest GDP figures out today. The economy shrinking by 2.6% in November. These figures were slightly better than expectations.
Yeah, they were. I think the expectations were, I think, more than 4% contraction. So it was actually much better than what was expected. And I think, more importantly, it was far, far better than what we saw when we were in lockdown in April, May time. And the reason for that, and this is where the thing that spurs the optimism, it's the fact that clearly businesses are adapting. This is not ideal for any of these businesses, but the fact that schools at the time were still open, the fact that things like manufacturing, construction were still going, and that businesses had adjusted was a massive positive. Restaurants doing deliveries or takeouts, shops doing click and collect. These are all adaptations in to a large degree that have happened since that first lockdown. And that's a really encouraging sign, because we know that the lockdowns are here to stay for the next month or two, probably maybe even three. So the fact that businesses have adapted so well is a really encouraging sign, just overall as far as the economy and the recovery is concerned. But obviously we're now in another lockdown that's even stricter again, so that is going to have a greater toll. But it does give you encouragement, the numbers that we saw from those November readings, particularly with the services sector, which accounts for more than three quarters of UK GDP.
And as you say, we are in a new lockdown here, which is supposedly stricter than the one back in November. Having said that, there is still quite a lot of traffic on the roads, which is surprising to see. It's almost as if there are a number of lockdown loopholes these days. So a lot of people are out and about, which suggests the UK economy might not shrink as much this time around either.
Yeah, the difficulty obviously is that things just still aren't open. So people may be feeling a little braver, or there's more people who can still go to work and are still encouraged to do so. So there is things like that is going to be supportive for the economy, but maybe also explains why the numbers are not improving as much as they did last year. Of course, there is obviously other factors as well, the new variants, etc., which is having a significant impact as well. But as you say, there's a very different feel, I think, about this lockdown as well. But that's natural. The first lockdown we thought was going to be 3 weeks long, and that would have a great impact. We're now 10 months on, and we know that this is not going to be lasting for only 3 weeks. So I do think people's attitudes are also changing as well as anything else. And I think to an extent as well, we know a lot more than we did back then.
Let's have a look at today's markets. They're down today. What is behind that? And they're not down significantly, but enough to take notice.
No, it's nothing overly considerable. I think what we're just seeing, really, it feels like these markets have run out of steam a little bit. There was so much that was mostly wrapped up in December. Then we had the Georgia runoff elections last week, and that resolution meant that the major risk events were mostly behind us, the most notable one remaining obviously being COVID. And one thing that the Georgia runoff did is it meant that we had that blue wave in the US. On the positive side, that means a massive stimulus program. On the negative side, it means possible changes for tax, which may be harder to implement. But it's the inflation side, which I think really gripped the markets. This idea that if inflation rises faster than expected, then is the Fed going to wait as long to taper its bond purchases? Is it going to wait as long to raise interest rates? And what we saw is US yields actually rising. And I think that may have had a psychological impact on these markets, combined again with the fact that we are seeing rapid COVID spread in the UK, but around Europe, across the US as well, and other countries. We're seeing cases appearing again in China, for example. So I think that took the kind of edge off things as well. And we were also heading towards earnings season, and sometimes you can see this when we're going into an earnings season. if there's nothing else major to focus on from a positive perspective in particular, then you may just see the foot come off the gas a little bit of fence sitting, because it's right, let's wait and see what the first few companies say and get a better idea of how this earnings season is going to be. And when you're looking at an earnings season as uncertain as the ones that we've had to become accustomed to, then maybe that's part of the reason why we've just seen a slight pullback. But like we said earlier, it's nothing overly significant. Even oil prices are off 3% today, but WTI crude's at $52. That's a perfectly good level as far as WTI crude's concerned. And since the start of November, it's rallied extremely strongly to get to the point that it's at now. It's rallied from $35, $34 up to $52. $52 is perfectly fine. I think we're just seeing again a little bit of profit taking kicking in, the dollar's making a bit of a comeback, so that acts as a bit of a drag on these commodity prices, the dollar obviously making a comeback because US yields are rising. So I feel like we're just seeing minor corrective moves in the markets, but at the moment, this moment in time, it's nothing more than minor. The one thing I will say with stock markets generally though is you do sometimes see, I feel, in first quarters that it feels like things are a little less positive. And I don't think, if we do see a bit of a correction in these markets, I think we should view them as being a healthy correction rather than being anything to panic about. And sometimes there is this tendency to kind of get caught up in any corrective moves that we do see, especially for some reason when it does occur at this time of year.
Indeed. Now, we are ahead of a massive week for the United States and indeed the world, really, with the inauguration of Joe Biden. And we discussed in detail last week the problems across the country and particularly, of course, with the Capitol. But things have calmed down a little bit. Massive numbers of troops, though, in Washington and all of the 50 United States. I want to turn to you now, Ed. It's all about, as far as the markets are concerned, about business is concerned, Joe Biden's stimulus proposal. And that is what they have their eye on at the moment.
Very much so. And I think what we're going to see is, sadly, we all hate partisan politics. But right now, what we're getting is some resistance from Republicans over Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. And I think what you're going to see is that you're probably, and I think a lot of people have to remind themselves that, you know, just because we got the blue wave doesn't mean we're going to easily see everything that Biden requested to get done. I think you have to remember the way the Senate works is that, you know, to move legislation through, a lot of these demands or requests are needing 60 votes. So that means you need 10 more Republicans to buy in on Biden's proposal. So what you're going to see is that one of the big resistance from Republicans has been that state and local aid, which Biden is looking for $350 billion. I think what you're going to see is that, you know, the markets, they're forward looking. And right now, I think, you know, 1.9, that's the starting offer for Biden. I think the consensus is that eventually you'll see them settle on something around $1 trillion. You know, the one thing that we have to remember is that even some of the Democrats, I think the Democratic senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, he's already, you know, voicing concerns over that price tax. So there's going to be a lot of negotiations over these next couple of weeks. And I think the expectations are that you're going to see something gets done by, I think, early February. There is, you know, one, you know, I think, and the reason why, you know, we're not seeing, while stocks are, you know, for the most part, still pretty close to these record highs, that's because With that blue wave, you know, Biden will still be able to get a lot of his budgeting through reconciliation. So there's going to be, you know, I think not that, you know, major concern that, you know, oh no, we might not get any stimulus. We're going to get some. We're gonna see it, and I think that's what's going to, you know, ultimately provide a much stronger stock market, I think, for the second half of the year. But we should see limited, I think, dips going forward, and a lot of that, you know, coincides with, you know, what we're going to get from Biden, and then also what the Fed has been signaling.
And Ed, signs of inflationary pressure in the economy? I mean, could that lead to rate rises in the medium term, at least?
It depends on who you're asking. If you're asking the Fed chair, the answer is no. I think that we're starting to see the emergence of some optimism for, you know, the second half recovery. Fed's Bostic was also, you know, touting that, you know, we could even see a case where we raise rates at the second half of next year. But Fed Chair Powell, I think, and it's unusual for the Fed Chair Powell to deliver such a strong message at a Princeton webinar. But nonetheless, it was his a major appearance yesterday. And what that signaled was that, you know, he is downplaying inflation right now and all these forecasts for inflation to rise this year. I think, yeah, the Fed could be wrong, but what the Fed is doing right now is they signaled that they're going to make sure that this economic recovery is not threatened by surging yields. That's why you see the 10-year yield, it hit a brick wall once it rose just above 118. And Powell is very clear in noting that, and other members too, that, you know, we might need to see inflation over 2% for a year before we really start to consider raising rates. I think the situation in the labor market that needs to really improve itself, and even if we do have a lot of jobs come back, you know, there's still I think the potential of some long-term damage that this pandemic has provided to the labor market, and that's going to keep the Fed maintaining this aggressive stance. You know, I think Powell also clearly noted that, you know, they're now is not the time to be talking about, you know, tapering. You know, the bond buying program is going to remain, I think, at these current levels throughout the entire 2021. I think you're probably going to see that the Fed is going to do everything possible to kind of thwart any concerns of a taper tantrum. And Fed Chair Powell, and I think the other policymakers are on board with that. Brainard, definitely. Bullard, yes. Bostic and Barkin, they've been kind of, I think, providing some of those hawkish comments. But I think there's no doubt that you're going to probably see, you know, if the economic recovery improves, and right now, you know, there's so much short-term risk. I think that you're going to see that the Fed is not going to have a you know, any difficulty in saying that, you know, we're still not near a position to start discussing that. So I think you're going to see that the Fed policy is going to remain very consistent, I think, in the first half of the year. And, you know, once the recovery improves, and hopefully that'll be at some point in the summer as the economy reopens, I think you're going to see that, you know, it seems that we always have a big moment at Jackson Hole, and that might be at the end of summer. So I think that's why when we could start to really talk about inflation you know, how the Fed is going to adjust policy because the recovery is running full steam. So I think right now we're still in the midst of this pandemic, and I think right now, you know, policy is not going to change anytime soon.
Everything Ed said is correct, and I'm in complete agreement. The only thing I'd add is that we have to remember that the Fed only recently slightly amended its own mandate in terms of interest rates to ensure that the markets believed that they were committed to keeping interest rates lower for longer. So if they now go and follow the same path which they have previously and effectively preemptively raise interest rates to stem inflation and keep long-term inflation projections close to 2%, they'll immediately undermine their own mandate changes and they'll lose credibility in the future. So they've almost backed themselves into a corner now where they can't, unless you're seeing significant inflation rises in a very short period of time, they've backed themselves into a corner where they can't act in any other way bar what Ed has just alluded to. And this would be the wrong time to signal any changes, because the last thing you want to do is spook the markets at a time when we're still very much in the midst of a pandemic, still very much in economic hardship.
And Ed, in a sign of optimism, three of the big US banks have released $5 billion worth of loan loss reserves. Is that significant?
Very much so. I think there's optimism. Borrowers are being able to repay their loans. I think that you're seeing that large parts of the economy are still performing nicely, and I think what we're seeing, the bank results from JP, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, they tell an interesting story. I think if you remember throughout these past few earnings results over these last three quarters, typically what we would see is, you know, the banks would kick it off and they would just have, you know, stellar trading numbers, you know, strong profits, and a very upbeat assessment about the consumer and the potential outlook once we're on the other side of COVID. And it seems that right now, JP Morgan, record profit. But Citigroup and Wells Fargo, their results weren't as stellar. I think what we're starting to see too is that there's a little bit more of a concern that, you know, eventually, you know, these extreme trading and investment banking revenues are going to start to taper. And what was very important to pay attention to was also some of the comments from CEO Diamond. I think what we're starting to see too is that there's a concern that eventually you're going to see Chinese banks start to make their way. And I think Diamond is, you know, he's eyeing that maybe in 5 to 10 years that you're going to see some stronger competition from China on the commercial side. So I think there's starting to be a little more risk here on the banks. The banks have been, you know, rallying strongly alongside treasury yields. And I think when you, you know, take into consideration what happened with the 10-year treasury yield this week, I think there's just been a little bit more skepticism here that, okay, maybe it's not time to just completely go all in on looking for banks to outperform. So right now you're seeing a soft start, which is not what we've, you know, seen throughout the pandemic for the banks when earnings season begins. So I think it's providing a little bit more concern as far as the consumer too. So this is a very one of the more downbeat starts that we've seen in recent times. So I think that you're probably going to see that the banks, you know, all financials are going to be a little bit under pressure. You know, it'll be interesting to see if when we get the rest, the Morgan Stanleys and Goldman Sachs next week, if they provide a similar story.
Okay, Craig, of course, we'll look ahead to the week ahead on Monday, but there is a bit of activity on Sunday from China, isn't there?
Yeah, so it's overnight Sunday night that we get a bunch of data from China. We've got GDP for the quarter, we've got fixed asset investment, industrial production, retail sales, a whole batch of very noteworthy data that I think these markets do pay very close attention to, and can sometimes almost set the mood ahead of the weekly open in Europe and the US. So I think that's one thing that's worth keeping an eye out for. Obviously in the US there is a bank holiday, so certain markets are going to be closed for trading, so it's going to be a shortened week as far as the US is concerned. It's also going to be quite a quiet day as a result on Monday. And as you say, we'll go into the week ahead on the podcast on Monday, but it's just worth noting there are a bunch of central bank meetings next week: Bank of Japan, Bank of Canada, ECB, and a bunch of PMIs on Friday as well. So there's no shortage of activity for the latter part of the week, but we may just kick things off with a slow start, obviously, depending on how those Chinese figures do perform overnight.
Okay, guys, thanks very much for joining us, and have a very good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, YouTube.